Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of our listeners. So today, our hosts are me, Eric. I attend Willits High School, and
Dan, and I went to high school a long time ago.
And today, our topic is about changing traditions. The holiday season that we're passing through is full of special events that have been celebrated for many generations. Some holidays are specific to religious beliefs, but most religions have some special observance towards the end of the year. And then there's also New Year's Eve, which isn't religious, but is a time for festivities around most parts of the world. Noisemakers, resolutions, and substance abuse are usually common parts of the New Year's Eve traditions in Western cultures. But when a tradition has been around for many generations, we call it a custom. And societies may be defined by their customs as these events influence the youth to behave a certain way. These observances are an important factor in shaping a culture, creating a heritage where certain habits and attitudes are expected of the youth. Young people are indoctrinated to accept morals and values that the society has maintained over time. And many teenagers begin to question whether this process of indoctrination is correct and whether the values and beliefs of their society are appropriate. Many parents become upset when the people they have been raising begin to question the principles and moral codes. Many teenagers will experiment with new ideas and attitudes or clothes or hairstyles or that sort of thing. Many of these young people will hear their parents say things like, "What's gotten into you?" Sometimes a parent will even say, "If you're living in my house, you'll do what I say, but when you're on your own, you can do what you want." Things that trigger these parental responses may be done externally manifested, like spiked hair, piercings, or clothing styles that don't reflect their values. Or the trigger may be internal, like a change in attitude or rejecting the values that the parents have carefully cultivated. For example, a teenager may tell their parents that they no longer plan to be a doctor, but instead they want to be an artist, or that they plan to blockade the cafeteria at school because they won't serve organic food, or a teenager might develop a posture of complete nonconformity. Many teenagers rebel against their parents and these traditions and customs. They choose to defy a custom that they have been raised to observe, usually because they question the value of the rule. Sometimes the motivation is because some of their friends are rebelling in that way, or they saw someone in a movie or TV act in a similar fashion. But in any case, parental response will influence whether the teenager has a growth period exploring new ideas, or becomes a dissident member of a troubled family. Rebellion tends to be noisy and create hurt feelings, or in some cases leads to violence and abuse, but many people think that it's an important part of growing up and becoming an adult. But what would happen if an entire generation of youth grew up completely accepting the traditions and habits of their parents? Would this lead to perfection of a society or stagnation? Are there any cultures where the youth actually don't rebel? We're going to discuss which traditions we see changing in our lives. One such change is the role of women in our culture. Another is that men may be becoming less violent. We will also talk about which values seem worthy of maintaining and whether change is always good. We will explore these topics for probably 20 to 30 minutes, then we will open the phone lines for your questions, comments, and insights. The purpose of this show is to engage the community in listening to young people speak out about what's happening in our lives. We believe that your input is equally important in creating connections between the youth and adult population. And we are in the Willits studio. Our phone number will be 707-456-9991. So one of the things about rebellion that I want to say first is that oftentimes it's treated as a very bad thing. And rebellion can be a bad thing, but only for certain reasons. The way I see it, rebellion really means that you're differing from what's been common, perhaps radically. But the reason why people rebel is because they're making a choice. And any choice that somebody makes, at least any rational person makes, is going to be for some beneficial reason. So if they're trying to do something beneficial to themselves for the reason of maybe being more fun or for the reason of anything else, they try to do it to make their life happier or better. And the reason why any rebellion may be considered a bad thing is because it has an unintended consequence. So rebellion is either good or it's unintentionally, you know, bad, unless somebody is just completely irrational. Any rational decision that somebody makes is going to be for some sort of good reason.
I'll go along with that. Rebellion is, I guess one of the questions is rebellion essential? How important is it that young people rebel? And, well, that's one question. So how important do you think it is that young people rebel against the way, I mean, it seems to me that when you're really young, like 6 to 8 years old, you pretty much go, most kids, not all, but most kids go along kind of with everything and they're happy customers. And then a lot of kids, when they get to be about 12 or 14, start going, hey, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to act in a different way. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, when kids get older, they want either have more independence or they desire to have more independence. And coming with that independence is a desire to make things the way that they want them to be. Because when you're independent, you don't have to rely on anyone else to make you happy. So if you're relying on only yourself to make yourself happy, then why would you go by what other people have told you? Why wouldn't you make things the way that you want them to be? And, you know, obviously when you're 12, you're still under control of your parents, so your parents are going to be able to control what you do. But when you have more independence, like you have a cell phone or your parents let you go out and hang out with certain people, you're going to want to do it the way that you want to do it. And not the way that necessarily your parents want. Maybe you'd try to respect what your parents would want you to do because you want, you know, to please your parents or please your family. But chances are most kids are going to do what they think benefits them the most, whether that be rebelling against their parents and doing whatever it is that they want to do, or obeying their parents and, you know, staying out of what they would call trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, also in music, there's a lot of things that have been changing, and I think it's almost kind of an indicator. You look at music from probably, there was a song actually we had on the radio a few months ago on this show. We played it at the beginning of, I think it was the Unhealthy Relationships, and I forget what it was called.
It Felt Like a Kiss.
It Felt Like a Kiss, right. And it was about this woman who was saying that her husband was beating her, and it felt like a kiss because of the reason
it proved that he loved her because he felt so strongly because she'd been out with somebody else.
Right. And yeah. So, and yeah, basically it's about, you know, beating your wife. And you look at more modern music and it uses a lot of derogatory terms towards women as well, like especially in rap music and that sort of thing. So, you know, a lot of people might say that back a long time ago, things might have been easier for women. But in all honesty, you know, what's worse is women being beaten or women being thought of as less degrading. And whether the opinion that that modern music is depicting women more respectfully than that music, it felt like a kiss, you know, then that's meaning that we've made progress, actually. Either that or that most people would maybe say that, you know, it hasn't made that much progress at all. But either way, that's to say that this change hasn't affected us in a bad way.
No, and you were talking earlier when we were talking before the show about evolution, that things evolve
right
more than then have these sudden turning points that there's this evolution. I think that's kind of a good example of that, right?
Right. Well, everything has a natural evolution. And, you know, with when you come into the world, you have a sense of what your parents want you to do or of how the world works. And for a while, you go with it. But after a while, you start to say, well, this could be different. This could change for my own benefit, or for my benefit, my generation's benefit, and you make decisions based on that desire. So when you try to change the world, or not change the world, but when your generation, you know, gradually does change the world, and then you end up having kids, and you try to instill your ideas into their lives, it doesn't necessarily work that way, because you've changed the world, or not changed the world, but society has changed as a result of what you've, in your generation, has wanted. And because the world is different from when you were born, your kids are then going to see the world differently. So I think we asked in our intro, what would happen if the youth were exactly like our parents? Well, the thing is it couldn't work, because the desired world from the previous generation is different from the world that they've created for the new generation. So really, it's not the youth's fault for being born into a world that inspires us to be different from the previous generation. And I think we kind of touched up on that, like with feminism. What is it that makes women be treated equal like a man? Because, obviously back, you know, women were treated very subordinately. But at the same time, you know, what should be considered, right for a woman, you know, because physically, you know, men are different. Like a woman couldn't, go out and be like, I mean, some women could, but the way that most women are built, they couldn't lift heavy objects and do things like manual labor. And they're probably better physically suited for jobs that don't include a whole lot of physical labor, because it's just not the way that their bodies are meant to operate. So, you know, as far as progress and evolution goes with that, we're definitely not at a perfect society where women can get any job, but I think we've definitely, you know, made progress. You know, and I think women are, starting to understand, a good place for themselves. And I think men are definitely starting to respect them more. You know, I mean, even at school, I'll notice, you know, that there's like groups of girls that'll have more control over what's going on than the guys. And it hasn't always been like that. It's more typically that, you know, that the males would have more power over what's happening. And it's not to say that girls always have more, but it's saying that it's a possibility in society now that's actually acceptable.
Yeah, well, that fits into the whole evolution part, in that, you know, women only have been voting for less than 100 years. I mean, the idea that the society did not deem women capable of choosing leaders. I mean, it's shocking to me that people felt that way. I'm sure it's shocking to you too. Mm-hmm. But then, so that got resolved. And then there was the Equal Rights Amendment that happened in, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, that was supposed to make, you know, equal rights in the workplace and end sexual harassment and give equal wages. Well, those things have passed, but there's still lots of problems. I mean, women do not make as much money for doing the same job as men most of the time in Western cultures. And we're only talking about Western cultures because women are still really oppressed in lots of other cultures, you know, and get to Asia or lots of different places. Women are still treated like, you know, something that you can buy and sell or throw away if you're tired of them. And so that is one of the evolutions. And so hopefully, I mean, my generation, I'm 60, and one of my hopes is that as the generations go on, that there will be a point where all of a sudden women do automatically get the same wages for the same work that men do, and that they're equally represented in political, in politics as well. I mean, it only makes sense to me. It's just, it's amazing that I could have grown up thinking that the old way was correct, even that the 50s model of stuff, that I grew up thinking that that was correct. And when I went and did my rebellion, I wasn't thinking about women. I was thinking about myself. I was thinking about that I had been fed a lot of values and mores that I wasn't supposed to question. And when I questioned them, the response was really negative. Like, whoa, you're not supposed to question that. You know, you're supposed to just be like us and everything will be okay. And I guess as I raised my kids, I wanted them to accept all my values. I realized that they did accept most of my values. They didn't accept all my values, and they're really independent people. And I'm happy about that. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing with women, and, you know, you mentioned other countries too, is I feel like not necessarily all rebellion, but effective rebellion, you know, for a culture and change in tradition and culture really has to be participated in, you know, well, to actually change it, it has to be participated in by someone in power. And because the tradition has already been set that women are in power, it's really kind of almost a catch-22. To get power, they have, you know, or to gain rights, they have to get power. But to get power, they have to, you know, have rights. And for when, you know, and I think it's really great that, you know, in America things are, you know, looking up, because now women do have power, and because of that, you know, their rebellion and their desire to change is a lot more effective now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because of that. You know, and, you know, we mentioned holidays too. And, you know, especially like in the dark months, you know, I think holidays are really important, you know, because the holidays really are a tradition. And, you know, if there's any, I think, holiday that's worth keeping, or holidays that are worth keeping, I think it's the ones that would be in the dark months, because really, you know, it's almost a depressing time for a lot of people, because things are getting dark, the days are getting shorter and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people rely on things like holidays like Christmas and Thanksgiving to bring them feelings of happiness, because otherwise they would just be sitting in the dark alone or wherever, you know, or because everyone's sleeping or tired or, you know, cold, and they want to, you know, light the heater or light the fire. They're doing something, you know, trying to stay warm, or, you know, I mean, not everything completely shuts down, but when, you know, in a lot of cold places, like say New York or like up in the mountains or something, I think Christmas and Thanksgiving are very important. And they're just important for everyone else anyway. I mean, you don't have to be a Christian to celebrate Christmas. There's also different religions that even celebrate have holidays around that time of year. You know, and a lot, I'm sure, like, even if there were no religions to ever exist, there would probably still be some sort of celebration, you know, just because it's a depressing time for a lot of people. And, you know, a celebration brightens things up, and it makes it something to look forward to. And especially, you know, New Year's, you know, a lot of people, you know, go out and party and have fun on New Year's, you know. And it's not just the idea of, you know, being depressing, it's a depressing time of year. It's that it's a time for change. It's a new year, and people say, I want to forget about this last year, if it's been bad or good or whatever it was. They want to, you know, celebrate it, light it off with a bang, and start the new one off good, you know.
Right, and wake up not able to remember what they did. But, you know, you're right. It is, it's almost like it is a ritual. Mm-hmm. Of, okay, this is the end of the old, and it's time for the next year. And the whole resolution thing is that, okay, and now I realize what I didn't do right last year, and I'm going to make this resolution, and I'm going to change. This next year is going to be different because I'm focused on it right now. And with everybody, or most everybody in the culture doing it, it becomes this really important turning point.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's actually a really good thing that you brought up there, Dan, because you know, the resolutions, New Year's resolutions, that really represents an evolution of society and what's really wanted in culture. Like, probably right now, as a state of America, being very unhealthy, you know, heart rate is a number one cause of death in America. You know, probably health is a major concern of a lot of people, and therefore, a very common resolution is I need to lose weight, or I need to get healthy this year, I need to get in shape this year. And whether or not you believe it, I mean, a lot of people are having that resolution. That's really almost a not necessarily a rebellion, maybe one might not say, but it's an evolution of society that people want to change their health. They want to change the way that their food is. And, you know, even, I like, we kind of talked about this too a little before the show, 4th of July, because the 4th of July is a holiday, but it's based on something that was rebellion. And, you know, back in 1776, they decided we're completely independent from Britain, and it was a complete rebellion, and it's now like a total celebration. Yet we still seem to view rebellion as a bad thing, and rebellion really just means that it's just the new generation or the new people, the people with radical ideas that are different from the old, trying to make the world better, and it. You know, the only reason that there's conflict is because the older generations might not realize that the world is changing in a way that requires people to think, act, and do things differently. And if, you know, I think maybe if there was a bit more of an understanding between the people who hold the traditions and the people who want to bring in new things, the liberals, then there would be a lot less conflict between there. And, you know, like a lot of traditional people would probably say, you know, they'd be against gay marriage or that sort of thing. But a lot of liberals would say, well, why not? It would make them happy. And I think that a really important thing for liberals, or not just liberals, but I mean just for society in America and around the world, is that if there's any kind of change or rebellion that should be embraced, it should be the kinds that allow people to be treated different, or not different, I mean treated the same. Like feminism, you know, I mean, it can obviously be taken too far, like I said, you know, because females, you know, don't have the same build as men. But as far as attitude and intellect, they should be treated the same, just as I feel that every human being has the same right. And whether that be being getting married or getting the same job as someone else, I think that should be something that's really valued by all of society.
You know, I had a little flash when you were talking about the 4th of July and that, and conservative versus liberal. Well, the big rebellion in this country right now is called the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. And they embrace pretty conservative ideals overall. And yet they're the ones that are rebelling against what they see as a too liberal society and make this... what to me seems like an outrageous claim that the media is too liberal. And yet, you know, normally we think of rebellion as toward or coming from the liberal angle. And yet the rebellions in this country right now and that is the Tea Party. And they use lots of Declaration of Independence get-ups. You know, they dress like Benjamin Franklin and they act like it's back to the founding fathers and mm-hmm. stuff. And it's interesting how that sense of rebellion can be manipulated for a vast amount of people. By using the word manipulated, I'm not necessarily meaning that it's not accurate, but I'm just saying that it's not... I'm not exactly sure what I'm trying to say, but it's a surprising thing that the biggest rebellion in America right now is toward conservatism, mm-hmm. conservatism, and not toward new liberal ideas. And pretty much the liberals in this country right now are sitting on their hands kind of going, well, we've got this guy in the White House, and therefore things must be a little bit better. And, you know, it's really curious. And, you know, we were talking and we listened to this recording earlier. In Europe, there's been lots of student demonstrations and riots over the last 6 weeks, lots of them, because they're starting to impose educational cutbacks and charging a lot to go to university or college, which has been free for the most part up to now. And London specifically had huge demonstrations, and they're still going to have more huge demonstrations coming up in January. And France did, and Spain did, and Italy did, because students are saying, wow, we don't want to end up coming out of college owing a bunch of money. And yet in our culture, in our society, in America, the average kid, the average person that graduates with an AA owes, I think it's $14,000, and the average person that graduates with a bachelor's degree now ends up owing $24,000, and that's the average, meaning that all the people that don't end up owing anything, you know, are factored into that. So there's lots of people that are owing $40,000 or $50,000 when they get a bachelor's degree, and they're rioting in Europe because they're going to start charging $10,000 or $15,000 a year to go to school. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought it was funny that you mentioned the Tea Party too, because they dress up all like Benjamin Franklin and all that. There's a quote by Thomas Jefferson: "A little rebellion now and then is a good thing." Mm-hmm. And that really is interesting. You know, to think that it's a rebellion of conservatism and of old traditions, but really, you know, who is it that's inspiring this change? Is it the new generation or is it an old generation? You know,
yeah, I think you're right about that. It's not young people that are
exactly
running the Tea Party at all.
Yeah, and that's really the future. It shouldn't be that the older generation is in charge, because once they make the changes, they don't have to see what happens in the future. It should be the young people that are in charge of it, because they're the ones who have to live out the rest of their lives. So, you know, like the whole thing with the Tea Party, you know, one could argue that, you know, some ideas are good, some ideas are bad. But that goes with any views, you know. Everyone's going to have their own personal opinions. But, you know, the truth be said, you know, like I just said, you know, I mean, young people are the ones that have to live out their lives, and they should be the ones to decide, you know, whether this is the way they want their lives to be. And not all young people can make, the best decisions, but that's to say with any generation. And the world has turned out, you know, just fine the way it is, you know, and that's just the way that the world works, you know. I mean, the older people are in charge, but then the younger people say, this is the way I want it to change. And it's really a stepping stone from each generation down and down and down, or up and up and up, however one might look at it. And that you're born into the world, you see the way it is, you want to change it a certain way. Then the next generation is born, they see the way it is, and they want to change it. And it keeps going on and on and on. So, you know, you can't even really say, you know, that the world has been better or worse, you know, because it's really impossible to look at the world from an omniscient view and see what's been a good decision and what's been bad, you know, what made people really happier in certain times, you know. I mean, me personally, I believe that the world hasn't ever been really better or worse at any time in life. I think that the world has been equally as good or equally as bad throughout, as long as, you know, people have been around. People get stressed, people get happy. I mean, it's a normal part of life, you know. I mean, look at people now. They're happy because they have, technology in their families, but they get stressed because they have to sit in traffic or thing, you know. I'm just talking about modern things, you know. But look at, before all that technology, maybe with even cavemen, you know, like they would have stresses like that, you know, they couldn't find food in certain parts of the year, or, but they'd also be happy because they'd have, you know, their family too. So, I mean, there's good and bad parts about, you know, whatever time you're going to talk about. Some stresses may be worse at certain times, some benefits may be better. But no matter what, I feel like they all kind of cancel each other out in the end, at least as far as, like, the time span of a total life. And some people are going to get short end of the stick, obviously. But as far as the way that society changes, it's always going to change no matter what, because people want to change the way that society is, because the world is never ideal for anyone completely. There's never such a thing as a utopia for anyone, because the world is changing, and no one can really think that this is exactly perfect. And even if there was a utopia, it could only be that way for certain people. So the world is always going to change no matter what. And I think the time when the world might be, say, the best is when everyone realizes that change is okay, that change doesn't always have to be bad. It doesn't always have to be good, though, either. And that's just because, you know, people make decisions that they think will be good, but will turn out actually end up being bad.
I agree. For some reason, when you were saying some of that stuff, I started thinking about people who are getting foreclosed on right now. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who would have a very difficult time at the moment trying to see their way to saying that it's always pretty good, because a lot of people economically feel incredibly stressed right now, and I think that this is a culture that's feeling stressed because nobody really knows what's happening with money and whether there's, you know, whether it's going to completely lose its buying power, you know, and whether the idea of owning your own home, which a lot of people are losing right now because of the way the economy's been jacked around, in my opinion, by the banks and really rich people, that all of a sudden there's going to be there's a lot of unhappiness. And I think that that's given strength to things like the Tea Party and stuff, because there are a lot of people that are struggling right now in ways that they never expected, that at this point in their life, they're 50 years old and all of a sudden their house is being foreclosed because they got laid off, because their jobs got cut back because of this, that, you know. And I agree with the overall thing that you were saying, though, that it is kind of all... it all sort of averages out. I mean, I feel lucky that in my lifetime I haven't lived in a culture that was fully at war in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I feel really lucky about that, because that happens in lots of parts of the world to lots of people.
Right. Everyone's going to get a, you know, short end of the stick eventually.
Well, I hope I don't get that short end of the stick. But
yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're going to open the phone lines now. Once again, the phone number is 707-456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, so please call if you have any ideas about changing traditions or youth rebellion. What would happen if an entire generation of youth grew up completely accepting the traditions and habits of their parents, and would this lead to perfection of society or stagnation? Are there any cultures where the youth don't rebel? What traditions do you think are most important to maintain? What traditions should be abandoned? Do you know of any traditions that have been created in your lifetime? Did you rebel as a teenager? How did your parents and other authority figures deal with you? Did you want to rebel but were afraid? Have you raised teenagers who have rebelled against your values, and how did you deal with them? What are the positive aspects of teenage rebellion? Do you think that people who rebel are just following a different leader, or do you think adults in our society rebel enough? Is there anything about the attitude of today's teenagers that you find really disturbing? Do you think that the youth in America should be demonstrating like they are in Europe? So please call in and be part of this conversation. Our goal is to involve the community in a dialogue that we all can learn from. The phone number is 707-456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or you'll be getting a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call in and be part of this discussion. We would really like to hear from you.
Yeah, we'd really like to hear from you. You know, a couple of the students that we're going to be hosting today ran into other things and weren't able to make it, and Eric has bravely taken them. Hey, look, we got calls already, so...
All right. Caller, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the show.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. It's been you've been carrying the load, and so you get to take a breath now. yeah, I I think it's an interesting subject. There's a process called individuation in human development in psychology,
where
becomes necessary. I guess the simple way to say it is that at adolescence we get a little more self-awareness, and we get on that path, and I guess we never really get off it. But with that comes distancing from the way you've seen the world, which has been handed to you, and you've been sheltered by it, but it doesn't really hold up in your circumstances, so then you have rebellious ideas, let's say, and then maybe they're understood, or maybe they're not by the people you voice them to. But anyway, that's the process I see as that's the verb to rebel.
Definitely,
but,
yeah.
But then you also... join with others at some point who have similar feelings and rebellious feelings and join in rebellion. And that's a little different matter. And that can be really short-lived, or it can, you know, go a lifetime also. I like the Native American approach to struggle, you know, as being trans-lifetime, really, sometimes. When you can't really expect that a lot of other people are going to get the thing that you're trying to share with them and get them interested in. So there's a kind of a range there of rebellion.
Definitely.
And if it's short and sweet, and if the damage is not great, then I say it's a good thing.
What was that word you said again? It was
individuation.
Individuation, yeah.
That's a really good point, Tim, that that is that teenage rebellion is the one that's the most necessary to me, is that you do develop your individuality. You break away from the mold that you were dropped into and shaping.
Or not. George Lakoff pointed out to us how a lot of people really need to have their reality defined by a father figure. And you know, there's some people that really cleave to that, to hold on to somebody else, or some unifying principle, you know, as if it were actually a physical law. But anyway, that's the choice. You brought up choice, and I think that's it. When you see choice, that's when you at least have the opportunity to make a choice.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Yeah, great.
Bye. All right, the number is 456-9991. There was another caller on here. You want to hit your redial button. We'll take your call at once. Yeah, I'm glad he brought that up, because somehow or other we had not used that term, which is an important one, individuation. Caller, you're on the air.
Excuse me, I better turn it off. Hi. I of course, rebelled against certain things that my parents taught, and my kids, in turn, did their rebellion. There's a saying in the Bible that says, raise up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. When I was thinking about that, I was thinking, in both my case and my brother's, and in my kid's case, yeah, we rebelled, but it was okay, because we all turned out okay. There are children who are rebelling against parents who are, you know, my husband worked with these kind of kids, who are rebelling in very unhealthy ways. So I think what that Bible verse means is not that you're going to imitate what your parents do, maybe not even believe the same thing, but that you're going to be, you know, a good whole adult, or, you know, as Tim said, you know, the individuation is going to work out okay. So that's just my 2 cents on it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Another good point there.
Yeah, well, you know, like I was saying, though, too, you know, there's always going to be a different views on what kind of rebellion is going to be accepted. Obviously, for most people, you know, if you rebel in a way that's destructive to society, like vandalism, then, you know, that could pretty generally and pretty clearly, you know, be something that's bad. But, you know, I liked how she said that, you know, that she rebelled too. And there really is a healthy rebellion, that if you rebel and change things to be a certain way, you know, if you have a good idea and you have good intentions behind it, something rational, then it really is a healthy kind of obsession. And, you know, she said, you can't be exactly, or you don't really want to be exactly like your parents. And that's totally true. You don't want to be exactly that person. You know, some people may even want to be, you know, radically different.
Yeah, well, I would say that, part of my personal rebellion as a teenager, I attributed it to the idea that I was told when I was being educated that the idea, that the goal of education was to make me ask questions. And then when I did ask the questions, I was told, no, don't ask that one. And that's what kind of stimulated my own personal rebellion as a teenager. And that, you know, I was made smart enough to question, but then if you question too far, anyway, well, these are good calls. So let's get some more at 456-9991. You could talk about traditions. You could talk about, you know, how traditions are changing, how important they are or unimportant. Should they be changed? Should there be some new ones? Okay. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. My name's Frank, and just bringing in another aspect of teenage years and just the physiological, the neurological, as far as the frontal cortex growing. And I work, or I've worked most of my life with teenagers, and what I always loved about it is that it's kind of like the mental and a spiritual component, they start to meld. It's like the first time the brain starts to be able to put words to deeper feelings. And this evokes an incredible amount of curiosity and desire to figure things out. And that's why, personally, this is my explanation why so many freshmen in college, you know, are taking the philosophy classes and the whole, you know, Don Juan and all the exploration out there, is because finally their brain is able to start to put words to feelings and intuitions and different things that are happening with their body. And with that, you know, there's the, as we get older and our ideals start to wane, you know, we look like we're rebelling, but I think we're just, you know, it is a rebellion of sorts, but it's really, I think, a connection with our, you know, some deeper things that are happening.
A self-understanding.
Yes, exactly.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you very much. Okay, 456-9991. You know, Madonna, who is not one of my heroes, did say an interesting thing, however. She said, I wouldn't have turned out the way I was if I didn't have all those old-fashioned values to rebel against.
So, I really like that quote. That's funny.
Yeah, I wish she was talented. But anyway, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Let's see, you brought up a lot of really good ideas. I'm so glad you're doing the show.
Thank you.
And one of them was about the individuation that often is the cause of, or the need for individuation as a cause for rebellion in teenagers. But when people are older and rebellion is more across a certain segment of society, usually that's because somebody, a class of people, is being deprived some basic needs, you know, over a long period of time, and are really, usually there's some real suffering involved. And so your statement about rebellion that was destructive to society, like vandalism, that would be a bad form of rebellion, I think I might like to hear you talk a little more about that, because it seems that with big rebellions, revolutions, that there is an intent to really change the society, something to radically change the rules that people are living under that really are disserving a number of people.
Right.
So I'll just hang up and listen to see if there are any more thoughts that come out on that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Actually, yeah, I like how she used the word riot, because that really inspired like a thought, you know, like, the government, you know, they're not giving out, or they're not giving what they should be to the people of their country or the people of the city or whatever, whoever it is that's rioting. So really, God, I mean, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you have to look from an omniscient view to really see what's right and wrong. And even from an omniscient view, you may not even be able to, because without moral principle based on something of some sort of time, you can't say that this is right or wrong. So, I mean, really, like, like here in America, here, say, in the town of Willits, you throw something into a window, and it's disrespectful. It's just, there's no need for it, because the way that things work in this town are pretty sound. There's not really a reason to riot. But in a country like, you know, I don't exactly have an example, but, you know, if in a country things aren't working perfectly, and you decide that you want to rebel, and then, you know, a good way to make a point to them would be to, you know, destroy public property and say, listen, this, you know, it sends a message that this is not okay. You know, everything that's public property, you know, everything that the government provides isn't good enough. You know, like, if you show that you're angry enough, then, you know, then it's going to make a difference. And that's really, you know, like we mentioned earlier, the 4th of July, it's that kind of rebellion.
Yeah, fireworks.
I think, do we just have...
Well, wait, I think this would be an optimal time to listen to that recording by this 15-year-old who was involved. I mean, you know, you were saying that...
Right, right.
Following up on what the caller said, that if people are being disserved, then there is a time when it is correct to riot or whatever, you know, really... Not just, you know, give the peace sign and say, we want to change it. And that's what happened in the last 6 weeks in England, where the students all of a sudden were told that because the bankers had blown the money for the government, that therefore they were going to have to start paying, instead of $3,000 a year, they were going to have to pay like $14,000 a year,
right,
to go to the university. And so this recording here that I want to play, and I want you to, who's, if you're calling, just wait about 5 minutes and this will be done. This is a 15-year-old who, they had a conference after one of the student riots in London. Students were protesting against this increase in university fees and cutbacks in education, which are severe, this austerity program thing that's happening all over Europe. And so here's the voice of a 15-year-old from London.
Well, I might be in detention a week, and the school might not be very happy, but we sure showed something much bigger last Wednesday. This was meant to be the first post-ideological generation, right? This was meant to be the generation that never thought of anything bigger than our Facebook profiles and our TV screens. This was meant to be the generation where the only thing that Saturday night meant was X Factor. I think now that claim is quite ridiculous. I think now that claim is quite preposterous. I think now we've shown that we are as ideological as ever before. Now we've shown that solidarity and comradeship and all those things that used to be associated with students are as relevant now as they've ever been. You know, the most incredible thing that happened on Wednesday, I went down. I thought I was going to go down in lunch break and then get back in time for lessons. Perhaps I should have known they put the guy in charge of the G20 in charge. Perhaps I should have been more concerned for my life than for whether I was going to get down for lessons. But when I tried to get out and I was told it was a sterile area by police officers standing and not letting anyone out, I thought, well, that's why we need a university education. If we don't get one, we end up in police uniforms. You know, when I was kettled in there, I was with thousands and thousands of school students who'd come down with their ties around their heads in their school uniforms, and yeah, they were cold, who'd come down, who'd never been on a protest before, who'd never joined a political party or been involved in a political movement before, who didn't have any economic knowledge or political degrees, but they were there because they believed in something. They were there because they believed in something bigger, and they were there because they knew that either... You know, there weren't a million choices. There were two choices. Either they laid down and took whatever the government threw at them, or they stood up and fought back. And so those school students who'd never been involved in anything before stood up and they fought back. And when they were in that kettle, being kettled in by police, you know, the word went round as we were sitting, huddling around fires, sharing out what little food we had, and the word went round, people said, we know what they're up to. We know that they don't think we're a danger to the public. I'm 15 years old, people there were as young as 13. We know they don't think we're going to run riots through the streets of London. We know what they're up to. They think that if they kettle us now, we're not going to come on a demonstration ever again. Well, let the word go out from today, people said. Let the word go out about next Tuesday. Let the word go out about next week and next month and next year. That they can't stop us demonstrating. They can't stop us fighting back. And however much they try to imprison us in the streets of London, those are our streets, and we will always be there to demonstrate. We will always be there to fight. People who had always thought that the police were just those people at the other end of the telephone line to help if there was a burglary. People who'd always thought that the media were just those friendly newspaper men who were there to give them that unbalanced picture of the facts. People learnt a lot last Wednesday. People learnt a lot as they huddled round fires and then emerged from that kettle to see headlines like vandals on the Evening Standard that afternoon. People learnt a lot when a police van was left in the middle of the road so that the police could tow it away and show the whole public, look what vandals these people are. People learnt a lot. So the message that goes out from last Wednesday is very clear. We are no longer that post-ideological generation. We are no longer that generation that doesn't care. We are no longer that generation that's prepared to sit back and take whatever they give us. We are now the generation at the heart of the fight back. We are now the generation that will stand with everyone who's fighting back. The most inspiring thing, I think, was that just after Wednesday, hundreds of people joined a Facebook group, school students joined a Facebook group in solidarity with RMT members on strike. Those are people who previously thought tube strikes were something annoying because they stopped them getting into school. Now they think they've got to link arms and fight back with everyone. So we want to show solidarity with everyone who's fighting back. We hope you'll show solidarity with us and send a strong message to this government that they can't throw their cuts at us. We're going to stand up and we're going to fight back.
Right, that was a 15-year-old speaking in London after the student demonstrations in, that was the 27th of November.
Very powerful, wow.
Yeah, it makes you think.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, because, I can't say from the adult perspective, because I'm not an adult, but, you know, like, he was saying how, that they're thought of as the generation that doesn't care or the generation that didn't fight back and now they're actually fighting for something that they want. I find that extremely inspiring because, you know, a lot of people, they have desires, but they gradually change things, but they don't always, go as far with it as they should because they're worried that, of the repercussions. I just find that really inspiring that they actually, did something about it.
Me too. Caller, you're on the air?
I'm in and out of the conversation. But individuation,
yes,
as people have brought up, is a necessary psychological process that if you individual is going to grow up to be a full human being has to go through, and that will necessitate some amount of rebellion. And then we have to distinguish between criminality and legitimate rebellion, and it's a very fine line. You need to remember the elite, those in power, are the first to use violence. And it shows up in the general population in a response in criminality or organized resistance. The unfortunate thing about criminality, it's indiscriminate. It hurts innocents. Whereas legitimate rebellion, people want to go after those who are in power and enforcing a status quo. And a status quo is always rigged to be beneficial to those in power.
Right.
And the last thing is, where rebellion doesn't occur in egalitarian societies, hunter-gatherers, where both young men and young women are initiated into this society after they reach puberty. And there's a distinct separation between childhood and adulthood. And I don't think you can have that in a modern society when the discrepancy between rich and poor is so great.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right. The number still is 456-9991. You know, there was a famous historian, Howard Zinn, who died this past year. And he wrote a book called The People's History of the United States, which is amazing. But one of the things he wrote was, civil disobedience is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience. Our problem is that people all over the world have obeyed the dictates of leaders, and millions have been killed because of disobedience. Our problem is that people are obedient all over the world in the face of poverty and starvation and stupidity and war and cruelty. Our problem is that people are obedient while the jails are full of petty thieves, and the grand thieves are running the country. That's our problem. It's Howard Zinn.
I like that quote, you know, because it really represents that rebellion is to benefit, especially, you know, like, I actually like one of our callers used the word riot, and that I really I can't stress enough how much that makes sense, you know, as far as rebellion being beneficial, because any riot is going to happen because that's where the breaking point happened between what is wanted and what is disturbing the mass population. And our last caller said, you know, it kind of goes with like bureaucracy. Those in power really benefit from their I don't know if he was trying to say rebellion, but they're the ones who have the most power, and the ones that are lower on the bureaucracy, because they don't have that as much power, they gather together because they have the numbers, they just don't have the power, and it's their fighting back that makes the resistance legitimate. And I think, you know, he mentioned criminality and legitimacy, and you know, what makes it criminal, I think, is to go against a system too radically. And, you know, as far as it being a fine line, I can't say I'm too sure about that. It can be kind of a fine line, because there really is opinions on what's right and wrong. And with, you know, something being criminal, like somebody goes in and into a courtroom or something, or some goes up to a politician and starts yelling at them, trying to make a point, trying to, you know, throw something in their face, put it in their head. You know, that would be something that would probably be considered threatening or criminal. But the truth is it may be putting something in their head that is legitimate and can actually make a difference in the county or the state or the country, whatever, you know, whatever influence that may have. But callers, we really would like to hear from you. Our number is 456. Oh, right. 456-9991.
You know, if we wanted to play this this poem, we need to do it now.
The feminist poem.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a call. Let's do the call. Caller, you're on the air.
I guess I'd like to pose the question: what is it? What is it about these young British students that caused them to put themselves out there and express themselves in a public way in opposition to the authorities? And why are American young people so obedient, so quiescent? We have the attacks on the future visions for young people in this country are at least as harsh, if not harsher, than what's happening in England or France. And yet the American youth, by and large, are obedient and quiescent and are not visible. And revolutionary change starts with the youth. You can't depend on the aging baby boomers to cause social change in this country. We need the youth, and yet the youth seem totally quiescent. Why?
Yeah, it's a question I've been asking myself, too. You know, it's stunning. The silence is stunning, kind of. But maybe it has to do with the distraction level. I recently heard a speech by Sir Ken Robinson, who's an educator in England, and he was talking about why there's so many kids that are said to have ADHD. And it's the what he says is it's just the enormous amount of stimulus, the distraction. They can't get focused. And I mean, I think that on another level that might somewhat explain, but what's the remedy is really the question.
Not so much. I mean, I don't know what the European youth are doing. Are they influenced by all this electronic gadgetry that is designed to keep them distracted from the real?
Yeah, I suppose they are.
It's going down, but I don't know if the Europeans are under the same influence. I don't know, but whatever it is, I don't know what it's going to take. But that's the youth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The youth need to lead here. The older people will be there for them in support, but it's the youth need to take the lead at this time in history, as they always have. So just my thought. Thanks.
Great. Thanks for calling
in. Yeah, well, I guess there just hasn't been a big enough stimulus, and unfortunately we won't have enough time to play that poem. But that's all we have for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your host today have been me, Eric.
And Dan.
Thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in a dialogue, so your call-ins are extremely important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willits studio. Youth Speaks Out is in cooperation with Safe Schools, Healthy Students, Bronco Project, building resiliency opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco Project, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314 or email at psanborn@mcoe.us. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Sunday of February, the 6th, at 3 p.m. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in February.